And welcome everybody on, both in the shul and in our Zoom room for our preparing for Leil Seder. This is one of the very important evenings in shiurim that we have in the shul because of the importance that we have to place on preparing for the Seder night. Much of the Seder night is preparing for the Seder night. The first half, certainly the first third of the Seder is explaining the importance of the mitzvah that we are going to accomplish. Whether it's the manashtana, which sets the scene so that we can answer the children, or whether it's the kadesh urchatz, whether it's baruch hamokim is the preparation. Omer B'loz Ben Azaria defines the mitzvah, Maiser B'lezer. So apparently the person who put together, the Chacham who put together the Haggadah, wanted to emphasize the importance of being prepared for the mitzvahs of the evening. And one of the challenges that families that have young children at home is how to be machshev, how to give importance to all the preparation the children have done. It's one of the challenges of having little children. They come back from yeshiva, they've all prepared in certain ways for the Seder. And it's often very, very hard, and it requires preparation in and of itself just to figure out how one's going to organize the Seder so the children get a sense of pride, and that if there are different ages and different appreciations, that somehow everybody's patient with each other and gives a chance for each other and organizes. But that's the various Divrei Torah and the expression that one has to give to the Rebbeim who prepared the children. Often different Rebbeim have different approaches, and they don't all resonate with everybody around the table. So that's one of the challenges, which requires thoughtfulness ahead of time, how we're going to organize the Seder and give every child their sense of pride in their learning. And the child who didn't listen so well in yeshiva also has to have a place near the Seder and has to be able to shine. So Hachana, preparing for the Seder, is emphasized in the first part of the Seder, but it's important for us to prepare in advance. What's going to be different about this Yom Tov? So one major difference of this Yom Tov is that many, many Jews have learned Masechtas Pesachim. And those who have learned Masechtas Pesachim will come to the Seder may not even fully appreciate it till after the Seder, what kind of a different Yom Tov it is when one has just learned Arvei Pesachim, when his head has been in Pesach Pesachim now for over 100 blot. So even if one doesn't appreciate it now, but in the course of the Yom Tov, it will be a different kind of Yom Tov because the person's heart and soul has been prepared even without focusing on it so much. What else is different is that when we stop to look at when the Baal HaGadol will tell us to think about how many makos was each makah. So that's a good opportunity to have children around the table, adults as well, to appreciate how we know well how one makah can be many makas. We knew it last year, we know it this year. You can stop and ask one of your children who's been in quarantine, and then how many makas are there in being in quarantine? And they'll tell you there's a one makah in quarantine that's being I can't go to the house. One makah is having to be with everybody else who can't go to the house. One makah will be that they can't go shopping easily. One makah will be that they don't go to school. They have to make up. The makah of being in quarantine could last a week or two longer than being in quarantine. So children, if you ask your children, what are the many different aspects of any particular difficulty, then I'd be able to go to minyanim. Having to wear a mask, having to plan ahead, can I go to this place? Because maybe I'll end up being in quarantine. It is a time to stop and show someone's children what the Chazal are pointing out, that one makkah, the way that it's described in Chumash, is just one piece of an entire array of difficulties. There is another idea that we can express that will be different this year is an idea that they saw in the Haggadah of Yisroel Meir Druk. We say in the Visha Amda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam. The simple reading is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from the hands of the Egyptians. But the another way of reading it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us mi yadam through the hands of the Egyptians. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned the Egyptian plans on its head. They wanted to destroy us by putting Moshe Rabbeinu into the Yam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us by having Moshe Rabbeinu saved by Bas Parah. So often we can look at different aspects of our past, Purim. We thought that we were suffering terribly by having Esther taken away from us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Matzileinu mi yadam, through the hands of those that wanted to destroy us. We pointed out 2 weeks ago that there's a similarity in the epidemic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Yeshua often through the tzara. The idea of a vaccine, it described the Meshech Chachma's idea that the vaccine is the machla. Again, this vaccine is a little bit different, but the vaccines that preceded this vaccine were the machla itself. They were the illness. That's the Kadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Mi'adam. The Kadosh Baruch Hu shows his absolute mastery over the details of our lives by giving a machla, giving a disease, and then giving a cure, which is through the very same machla. Came across a very interesting idea by Yerbeinu Oysonu HaMitzriim, also from the Haggadah of Yisrael Meir Druk, by Yerbeinu Oysonu HaMitzriim, that it should say the pasuk should be by Yerbeinu Ulonu HaMitzriim, that they did bad to us. By Yerbeinu Oysonu was a very stiff phrase. So he told the story of not such a long time ago story, that there was a Jew who called up Rabbi Chezkel Besser. Rabbi Chezkel Besser was one of the great askonim on behalf of the Aguda. And Jew calls up, Chezkel Besser picks up the phone, and he hears a person who can't get words out of his mouth. He is in such distress. And finally, Rabbi Besser is able to calm him down a little bit so he can explain what's happening. And it turned out that he was a Jew who was getting, the German Jew, who suffered terribly during the course of the war, and he was getting reparations from the German government, but somehow he got those reparations by defrauding the German government, and as a result then they were on to him, and he was guilty, and he said they're going to take him away and they're going to lock him up. Anyways, Rebbe said, I'm not really equipped to deal with this. I really don't know, I have not done this before. We'll see what we can do. So he calls up the German embassy, and it takes a long time for him to get through. Finally, he gets through to one of the people in charge. And he begins to explain that he needs to have a meeting, and they keep asking, what's the meeting for? He tries to be evasive. He needs time. A meeting won't be long. But finally, they put him against the wall. You have to tell me what it's about. So he begins to tell the story. And the person in the embassy was aware and said, I know the name, I know the story, there is nothing that you can possibly do for this person. This person will get the full load of the law against them. So Chezkel Besser said, can I at least have a short meeting? I won't take long. All right. They granted him a meeting. Obviously, he davened hard to have mana loshen. So he comes to the meeting and he says, do you know anything about this person that you're accusing of this terrible crime? I said, I know very little. I know that he obviously was a Holocaust survivor and suffered. So I want to tell you a little bit about the person. I want to tell you that this child, he was a child and he saw his parents taken away from him right in front of him. Last time he saw his parents, it was with the German soldiers, and he knew what was happening. He then was taken away, and he came to the, got off the train, and it was time for selection. And the person next to him said, how old are you? So he said, if you tell him that age, you're dead. Tell him 5 years older. So he gets up there, 5 years older. So Chezkel Besser said he lied, and it saved his life. A few days later, they were making various decisions as to which one should go. Somebody takes him aside and said, what's your skill? He said, I'm a kid, I have no skills. You tell me you have no skills, you're dead. Tell them you're no nutrition. He said, I know nothing. Tell them you're no nutrition. He told him no nutrition. Saved his life. That was the second time that this person learned that lying saves lives. Then it wasn't long after that that he was posted in the kitchen. But the only way to be able to get food is if he stole potatoes. First, he could only steal potato peels. After that, he learned how to steal potatoes. So he said to the person in the embassy, he said, who made this Jew into a criminal? And the person in the embassy was very impressed. And he said, let me think about it and I will see what I can do. And a few days later, the case was dropped. So Rav Druk says that's Vayoreyu Oisonu HaMitzvim. The Mitzvim made us into bad people. They made us into people that are bricklayers. They made us into people that had to do end runs and workarounds in order to save our lives. That's, he thought that's an interesting shot and how to explain Vayoreyu Oisonu HaMitzvim. That raises another question, and that is, so why do we have a practice when we train our children to steal the afikomen? Are we training our kids that the way to get ahead is to steal the afikomen? The way to stay awake is to steal the afikomen. So I want to put a different slant on it that the Sfasemis, the Ger Rebbe, describes. It's called Choydvenes HaMatzis. We grab the matzis. Sfasemis says that when the child grabs the matzah, and then when the child tries to figure out the best way to grab the matzah, and tries to sneak around just to grab the matzah, at some point in the course of the evening, the father should tell the child, that's how we grab mitzvahs. That's how we have to be invested in trying to get mitzvahs. You had to grab the afikomen. And Chazal said, we do this minute because that way it'll keep you engaged. But you have to learn from this. And then the Sfasemis says, and the father looks at himself. He learns from his child. And he says, if that's how a child runs to grab a matzah, then that's how I should try to grab mitzvahs. In the Haggadah of Rebelech Biederman, when he describes this idea, so he says it's an idea which some of the Svarim discuss, that when it says, Koveya itim la Torah, so Koveya means to set aside for learning. But there is, sometimes in Tanakh, the word Koveya means to rob, to steal. Remember, this is a young child from above in Oshur, Nachman Rabinovich, that and therefore the idea of Koveya itim la Torah, the pshat is set times aside. But there's another insight. Steal times. Bichote v'samatzes for the purpose of learning. Then I was thinking that you also teach a child the sense of achrayus, because you can't finish the Seder without him. You can't have the afikomen without bringing it back. In a certain sense of responsibility, he learns how to run for a mitzvah, a chava mitzvah. He also learns how to be a person of responsibility in helping perform the mitzvahs and keeping the Seder. So that, I think, is an interesting positive slant that one can share with one's children. There is another insight from the Ger Rebbe Sfasemis that the night is called the Seder, order. And it's the only time that I can think of where we announce the agenda, we announce the order of the proceeding before we do the mitzvah. We could easily, before a Kiddush or Yom Tov, we could stop and say, Yak Nahaz, Ya Kiddush Ner Abdullah. We could do that. We don't do it. For Abdullah, we could stop and say, Yayin Abdullah, Besomim Ner. Why not? Can have a nice song. Kaddish Yerchatz. The only mitzvah I can think of, but we stop and say, you know what? There's a Seder, and we're going to announce the order right now and check off the box as we go along. So Sfasemis says, because we should appreciate there's a Seder to Nisim. We think there's always a Seder to nature. And Nisim, miracles, are the disruption of nature. So the Baal HaGadol wants us to appreciate there is an order to Nisim as well. And I was thinking that really captures the three heading psukim that we darshan to tell the story. We tell the story of the Geula of redemption. We have three psukim that we then describe the Yetzias Mitzrayim around those. One is Vayered Mitzrayim, that we went down to Mitzrayim. Vayereya was son of four psukim. They did terrible things to us. Vanitzak al Hashem, we daven, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. That's the Seder. The Seder is that we get ourselves into trouble. HaKadosh Baruch Hu increases the tzorah sometimes in order to give us whatever we need for that. They have the Kura Barzal. Then it's up to us davening. Once we daven, Klal Yisrael davens the way supposed to daven. So ultimately, it's going to bring the Seder of the Geula. That's the Sfas Emes' idea that there's a Seder to the evening, a Seder to Nisim. Matisyo Solomon points out that we say by Rosh Chodesh, Misha Osa Nisim La Veseinu, Vagol Leisom Me'amdus L'cheirus. So, Vagol Leisom. So, we introduce a Kadosh Baruch Hu as Misha, the one that does miracles, right? When we ask for refuah, we introduce a Kadosh Baruch Hu as Misha Berach, the one who gives blessings, the one who can bring a refuah. So we shouldn't really say Misha Goel, the one who redeems. We don't. We say Misha Osa Nisim, the one that does miracles. So Solomon says, you see that Geula, redemption, is always miracles. Golos is Hester upon him. We don't see Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Geula by definition, very interesting approach. Geula, redemption by definition, has to be Kadosh Baruch Hu causing some disruption, some Geula. So that's the Seder to Nisan. The Seder is Esther upon him. Then there's davening, there's tefillah, the appreciation only Kadosh Baruch Hu can answer us. And then Kadosh Baruch Hu revealing himself as the one who answers our tefillahs. We'll end with a very pretty idea from Rabbeinu Yonah. He says that we quote the pasuk of Bris Min Hapsorim that at the end of the Geula, Don Anochi, then I will judge. The Acher came Don Anochi, then I will judge. So he says that one word, Don, Rabbi Yonah says, is a two-letter word, tiny, tiny word. He says that tiny word brought makos, 10 makos. Chazal say it wasn't just 10, 40, 50. That one word done brought Kriyas Yamsuf. The one small word done brought down Mitzrayim. He says, we have a Geula, a redemption, that is prophesized through countless prophecies of Yirmiyo, of Yeshaya, of Yechezkel. He says, if that one small word done can bring about the Yetzias Mitzrayim, you can only imagine. Impossible to imagine. The Geula that we will celebrate when HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds that we are worthy, Vita Chishana, and Bezra Hashem, through the celebration of the night of Pesach, we will speed up the Geula that we are praying for.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi. Okay, I think it's fair to say that we're all very much looking forward to Pesach Tavshin Pe Aleph, especially thinking back on what Pesach looked like last year. And I saw a beautiful remez. It's not obviously the Pashut Pshat, but a beautiful remez and a newly printed Haggadah by a Rav from Muncie named Rav Yaakov Weiss. The name of the Haggadah is Tagid Li Yaakov. It says just such a beautiful idea to think about when we say Shechianu this year. We know that Yaakov Avinu, Vayeshev Yaakov, Rashi tells us from the Medrash, Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalom. Yaakov had been through enough. Yaakov had suffered quite a bit. Yaakov wanted a bit of tranquility at the end of his life. Again, he had suffered terribly throughout the course of his life. Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalom. And of course, Kafatzalav Rog Zosho Yosef. When Yaakov finally thought he could have a little peace of mind, a little menuchas hanefesh, shtickle retirement, all of a sudden, life got so much more difficult. The tzaros increased that much more. So this Haggadah, this beautiful Haggadah, Tagid Li Yaakov, says that the word b'shalva, b'tiyash Yaakov, leishev b'shalva, you know, think about this, and you make shachiyanu at the Seder. He says, the b'shalva is Rashi Tevos, baruch shachiyanu v'kiyimanu lezman hazeh. In other words, a person wants to perhaps have it a little bit easier. And yet, if you think about it, somehow, despite the fact that last year was a very different type of Pesach than this year, halavai, it should be a bit more simchadik, it should be a little bit more together, we should have a little bit more menuchas hanefesh, but there's always uncertainties, befrat, bechlal. And therefore, when a Jew tries to lean into that shalva, tries to be able to enjoy the Yom Tov, and at the same time know that the world is still imperfect, but he pauses for a second and he says, you know what? Bikesh Yaakov Leisha B'Shal. That even despite the fact that Kafat Zalav rogues Osho Yosef, even though there's going to be more tsaras to come, and of course it's interesting that it's Yosef Hatzad, right? In a sense, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu sends more tsaras to us, it's for the goal of being Yosef HaTzadik, to try to extract further tzidkus from us, to challenge us, obviously, not to break us, but to help us to grow. But when we think about all of the places that Jews have been throughout history and have still been able to say, Shechianu v'kimanu v'gianu l'zman hazeh, to be able to acknowledge the bracha, despite the fact that things are imperfect. And you picture a Jew sitting last year, maybe by himself or herself, saying, Shechianu v'kimanu v'gianu l'zman hazeh, on the first night of the Seder. And yet it's unbelievable that despite the tzaras that have happened, the tzaras that are still happening, right, to be able to say, Afal Pichein, I'm able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what we have. And I think that's just a beautiful kavana to begin the Seder this year. Despite the fact that things are still imperfect, despite the fact that we still have much to daven for, despite the fact that we still feel the pain of our losses in so many ways over the course of the past year, but we can still say that Shechianu and appreciate and to embrace the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. And at the same time, to recognize that it shows something about the strength, the resiliency of the Jewish people, that despite the fact that things are imperfect, we're able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Say an insight that I saw, I like to think about the charoses, because I think the charoses is an underrated part of the Seder. It's a bit of a mystery, what exactly the charoses is. What does the word charoses even mean? Rashi and some of Farshim think that it's an Aramaic word, perhaps an Aramaic word for a substance that is crushed or diced, finely crushed. Perhaps it's related to the word cheres, which means earthenware or clay, perhaps referencing, as we'll see in a moment, right, the notion that Klai Yisrael were busy building bricks, preparing for paro, working with clay, with mud. And the Mishnah actually records an interesting machlokas about charoses. Is charoses a mitzvah? Maybe charoses is not a mitzvah at all. Maybe charoses is merely to counter the kafa. And then there's a machlokas, what is the kafa? Maybe the kafa is the pungency of the maror. Maybe the kafa is some type of tiny organism that can be poisonous or dangerous within the maror. Such an uncertainty that surrounds the mysterious charoses. The Talmud Bavli offers two explanations for the imagery, the messaging of the charoses. What is the message of the charoses? One opinion of the Gemara says the charoses, of course, which contains within it tapuach, which itself is a machlokas. What is tapuach? The Vilna Gaon thinks tapuach maybe is what we would call an apple. Rabbi Rutam and Tosfos, Mesechta Shabbos, I think maybe other places as well. Rabbi Rutam says tapuach is not an apple, tapuach is an esrog. Some say it's some type of citrus fruit. I'm not sure exactly what's what. But the Gemara says to commemorate the tapuach, that the Jewish women in Mitzrayim, again, had that resiliency to continue to become pregnant and to give birth to children, tachas ha-tapuach. So perhaps that's what the charoses is to remind us of. The tapuach is perhaps the main ingredient of the charoses. A second possibility, the Gemara says, again, there's the Talmud Bavli, we'll see the Yerushalmi in a moment, that perhaps the message of the charoses is to remind us of, again, like we said a moment ago, cheres, the dirt, the mud, the tit, the clay, the mortar that the Jews are using as slaves to be able to build and to work for power. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that, no, maybe the charoses, and again, this will have a nafkamina in terms of the style of charoses that you have. Is it a thicker substance? Is it a thinner substance? The Talmud Yerushalmi says that perhaps the charoses is to remind us of the blood. That itself is a machlokas amongst the mafarshim. What blood? Is it the blood of the Jewish children that were being murdered by power, Yemach Shemo? Or perhaps it's the blood of Makas Dam, it's the blood of our salvation, the beginning of the Makos. So you see these different messages contained within the charoses. On the one hand, it has the resiliency of the Jewish women, the preparation for Geula, that hope of keeping their eye on the prize despite all the suffering. You have the charoses representing the slavery itself, the Jews working in the tit, in the cheres, trying to build for paro. You have this reference to the blood, which itself has this duality of maybe it's Makas Dam, maybe it's Jewish suffering, Jewish babies being murdered. And again, that will dictate maybe the type of charoses you make. Is it thicker like a clay? Is it thinner like blood, different minhagim, exactly how to make it, when to make it. But there's a group of Rishonim that say that in terms of the recipe for charoses, it's supposed to contain some of the fruits and the nuts that are described in Shir HaShir. The way that the Jewish people are compared, trees, nuts, fruits, that the Jewish people are compared to throughout Shir HaShir, which of course is the love song between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between Kutch Avrichu and Knesset Yisrael. That's supposed to make up sort of the bulk of the recipe of the charoses. Almonds, dates, figs, pomegranates. So I saw a beautiful, very profound, and very simple lesson. How could it be that Shir HaShirim, which is again the greatest expression, the almost obsessive love that Hashem has for the Jewish people and the Jewish people have for Hashem, how could it be that Shir HaShirim is found in the blood and in the clay? Here you have this substance which in so many ways draws on the pain, the suffering of Klal Yisrael, and yet within it are the ingredients of Shir HaShirim. And again, I think it's a very appropriate message, especially for this year. The notion that yes, that even amidst the straw and amidst the clay and amidst the bricks, nonetheless, the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still there. And it's our job to try to identify amidst the mixed messages which permeate so many of the objects of the Seder. The matzah being gullus and geula, and the duality of so many of the elements of the Seder. The charoses in particular has an element of the mesiras nefesh of the Jewish women, the suffering of the Jewish people. It has the love, the sweetness of Shir HaShirim, and the pain of Jewish blood being spilt at the same time. And again, it's our job throughout the Seder to try to pause and to recognize that yes, that even in the straw, even in the clay, even in the mud, even in the bricks, there was still a Shir HaShirim. There's still an Avas Olam that HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels for the Jewish people, and that's always there. It's just incumbent upon us to try to identify it, to try to notice it. Let's go to Dayenu. Dayenu, of course, begins with the phrase Kama Milos Tovos Lamakom Aleinu. What exactly does that word mean? Kama ma'alos tovos lamakom aleinu. The simple pshat, the way that most understand, it's referring to ma'alos tovos, succeeding steps, levels, madregos, ma'alos tovot, levels of kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has showered upon us. Ma'alos tovos aleinu. That's how many understand. The Malbim has a unique interpretation, Kedarko B'Kodesh. The Malbim always had a unique perspective, how to look at Hebrew words in a unique and remarkable way. The Malbim says that the ma'alos is actually not related to an aliyah like madregos or steps, levels, but rather the word is related to the word le'alei, which means to praise. As we say, lefichach anachnu chayavim lahodos lahalel l'shabeach lefa'er l'romein lahader levarech le'alei u'lekales. So kama malos tovos aleinu, how many different types of praise is incumbent upon us? And it totally flips dayenu on its head. Because the upshot of this dispute, how do I translate the word ma'alos? Is it madregos? Is it levels? Or is ma'alos perhaps an expression of praise? Is a machlokas and how to understand the word dayenu. Dayenu, what are we saying? Dayenu. Thank you, Hashem, dayenu. If you would have done X but not Y, dayenu. That would have been enough for us. It's very self-centered. It's with a sense of a karas tov, but it's saying that would have been sufficient for me. I would have been able to say, that's good, that's enough, I have enough. But the Malbim understands, no, dayenu is not us saying that we have enough, but dayenu, that kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon us would have been enough of a reason to be singing to the Rabbono Shel Olam. Dayenu, if Hashem would have only done this little bit for us, ma'alos, that itself is worthy of praise. Kama ma'alos tovos lamakom aleinu. How many opportunities did Hashem give us to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu? To say, this is enough, dayenu, this is enough of a reason to say thank you to Hashem. And what's so beautiful about the Malbim's perspective, again, a little bit, it flips the whole thing on its head. It's not saying, well, I have enough, but it's saying, not only do I have enough, but even if it was just a small thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me, that's enough to say thank you for. Despite the fact, again, that there's a lot of more things that in theory I would enjoy and I would like in my life. But the little bit that Hashem has given me, if I really contemplate what that little bit is, it's not so little at all. I'll tell you such a beautiful story of perspective. Rav Chaim Halberstam, the Heilig Divrei Chaim, the Rebbe of Sanz, passed away in 1876. The Divrei Chaim had a minug, very mysterious minug, speaking of tapuchim. The Divrei Chaim, his motze Simchas Torah Tish, was known as the apple tish. It's a minug by certain Hasidic rabbis to to give out apples or maybe to throw out apples at the tish at Simchas Torah. The Divrei Chaim had such a practice on Motzei Simchas Torah. And it was throw apples out to the crowd, and it was a segula. Seen people saw unbelievable yeshuas, specifically with regard to parnasa. If you caught an apple, you know, the havdil, the excitement you watch someone catching a baseball at a baseball game, you know, the excitement of the race, like what are the odds that I'm going to catch it? But the havdil by the Divrei Chaim's Motzei Simchas Torah tish, when he's throwing out apples, if you caught an apple, wow, you knew you were gonna, everything was gonna turn around for you, or your business was gonna take off in a remarkable way. And this curious minhag became very popular, not only amongst the Hasidim of the Divrei Chaim and Tzanz, but people who wanted to, you know, win the lottery, so to speak, showed up for the tish, hoping to catch an apple. And over time, the crowds grew so boisterous, it was so packed, the room was so full, it was so overcrowded, that it was becoming almost dangerous. People were leaping over each other, you know, diving over each other, trying to catch an apple, pushing each other out of the way. And the Rebbe's inner circle, made up first and foremost of his son, the Divrei Yecheskel, Rabbi Yecheskel Shraga Halberstam, who himself became a big Rebbe, Rabbi Yoshinov, the Gabayim, they said, Rebbe, we got to stop this. It's getting dangerous. And the Rebbe said, but people need parnasa. People need parnasa. He said, people are going to get trampled. This is dangerous. We can't do it anymore. We have to at least come out with some new takanos, new rules. What are the new rules? So they came out with the following new rule. They said, the Rebbe has to get up and say that if anyone pushes by the apple tish, if you push by the apple tish, even if you catch an apple, you're going to see 10 years of poverty. Not only will you not see bracha, but you'll see 10 years of poverty instead. So everyone stood perfectly still by the apple tish. Everyone stood in their place with their hands raised, hoping that maybe an apple would come in their direction. There was this one alter yid, one of the Ziknei HaEidah, this old chassid, who was by the apple tish one year, and everyone's standing there, you know, kedasa kedin, standing there very appropriately, no one's pushing, no one's shoving, and all of a sudden this old Jew starts pushing his way through the crowd, trying to catch an apple. So they said to him, Rabbi Yid, don't you understand what you're doing here? Don't you understand what you're jeopardizing here? The Rebbe put a klal, anyone who pushes by the apple tish, 10 years of poverty. And this alter yid says, at my age, 10 more years, even with poverty, Dayeno, would be great. I would love it. I would love 10 more years. No, I think that's the perspective of the Malvim. That's kama malos tova saleno. We don't have everything that we need, but Dayeno, we have enough to be able to say thank you to Hashem for each and every little bit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us along the way. And I think after a year that we've gone through, thinking back again from last Pesach to this Pesach, Dayeno that we're alive. Dayeno that we exist. That we can come again, like that opening idea that I shared, the Shechiyanu, to be able to say, Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'yanu l'zman hazeh, that I've made it to this point, Dayenu, that's not a small thing at all. B'chol dor v'dor chayiv adam liros es atzmo, kilu hu yatsim mitzrayim. Where are we on the clock? Good, doing okay. Tonight, the 5th of Nisan, is the yard site of the Oiv Yisrael, the Apterav. Rabbi Yeshua Heschel, one of the Talmidim of Reli Melech of Lezhensk, left this world in 1825. He has a beautiful insight in his writings on Pesach, in the Ovi Yisrael and Pesach. And it's based on a Medrash, a Maimar Chazal, a Medrash Tehillim. The Medrash gives three different, in the Medrash we find, three different descriptions of what it was like to try to free a Jew from the clutches of Mitzrayim. One opinion in the Medrash is that we were like a tzipor, trapped in the hand, like a bird trapped in the hand of a hunter. And the hunter has his grasp over the bird, and he could take its life at any time. So too, kach hayu Yisrael mishukam v'mitzrayim. We were like a bird trapped in a hunter's hand, caught in the hand of the one who was hunting birds, catching birds. A second description, one of the Tanaim say, a description of a Jew in Mitzrayim was like an uber shu nasun b'soch me'ea shal behema. It was like an uber, like a unborn baby animal within its mother's womb. Right? Within the mother, growing, developing, nurturing itself, growing within the mother, the uber besoch its mother, within the mommy behema. A third opinion, Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra says, we were like zahav, we were like an unrefined block of gold that finds itself in the kur hazav, and it takes the zahavi, it takes the refiner of the precious metals, who's poshe yadu v'noto hazav menakor, who needs with great care to insert his hand into the furnace, as it were, and to extract the pure gold. So the Oiv Yisrael, the Apterav, again, whose yard site is tonight, says perhaps these three different descriptions in the Medrash correspond to three types of Jews that found themselves in Mitzrayim. Tzadikim, Beinonim, and Rasha. The bird in the hand of the hunter, the bird has really no shaychus to the one who's caught the bird. They don't have a relationship. It happens to be at this moment, the hunter has the bird trapped in his hand. But as soon as he opens his hand, the bird is able to go free, and the bird is an independent entity from the hands of the hunter. What about the little baby animal growing inside of its mother? There, there's a much stronger relationship. It's the mother's child. Again, it's a separate entity, but it lives within the space of its mother. But the block of gold, the unrefined block of gold, is this terrible mix, this terrible erbuvia of both the purest of gold mixed together with all of the impurities that have yet to be separated. And that, says the Ohev Yisrael, corresponds to the Rasha. The Rasha of Mitzrayim, who had become so intermingled with the Egyptians that it was hard for them to separate themselves. They couldn't pull themselves out of Mitzrayim. I saw in the Eim HaBanim Smecha, it's on my notes that I saw many years ago in the Eim HaBanim Smecha, of Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, who the Rav loves to quote, the Mishnah Sachir, very fond of his Torah as well. So in his magnum opus on Yishev Eretz Yisrael, on the Eim HaBanim Smecha, so he quotes the Rashi in Parshas Nitzavim. V'shav Hashem Elokecha es shvuscha v'richamecha v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come and he's going to gather us in from the exiles. And Rashi says in the second shad, v'od yeshlomar shegadol yom kibbutz galios uvekoshi, that sometimes gathering in is difficult. Letting the bird out of your hand is not so hard. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could pull up in the Egyptian hands and the bird goes free. Extracting a baby calf from its mother, it takes a little bit more of a skill. To be able, again, in the words of the Medrash, to be poshed yado v'noto hazahav min akur, is a very dangerous and very delicate process. And therefore, says Rashi, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to gather us in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do so with great difficulty, so to speak. Ki ilu hu atzmo tzarech lios ocheiz biyadav, as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, amazing Rashi, and it's up. Hashem has to grab each Jew by the hand, so to speak. Mamish, Rashi says, ish min makomo, and to drag him in. And he quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya that emphasizes that point. One by one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to collect us. Explained Rav Yisachar Dov Teichtal after citing this piece from the Ohev Yisrael on Pesach. He says, I think the Rashi is referring to this third category. It's not the bird that's able to free itself a little bit more easily. And it's not the baby calf inside of its mother's womb, which is a little bit more connected, right? But it's a Kadosh Baruch who's sticking his hands into the furnace, as it were, to extract, to pull out those Jews, to separate us from the impurities that we've become attached to in a deep way. And yet, says Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, but Hashem in his great love for Klal Yisrael is prepared to do just that. Kadosh Baruch is prepared to reach into the furnace and to pull us out. And that's a tremendous chizik, that wherever we find ourselves, as ready or as not ready as we are for Geula, as ready or as not ready as we are for Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always finds a way to help us to cross that finish line. And last but not least, something that I like to think about each year, and again, perhaps we think about it in a different way this year, the pace of Geula. So interesting. We sat in Mitzrayim for 210 years of slavery, maybe 400 years, depending on how you calculate, 430 years, depending on how you calculate. There's a sense of this long, long process, this unfolding process of the refining of Klal Yisrael in that kor hazav, in that kor habarzel of Mitzrayim. And yet after all of this time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides, now suddenly we need to leave in an instant. B'chipazim. All of a sudden we're rushing out of Mitzrayim. What's the rush? We've been here for so long. And we know the Arizal around the 49th level of Tumah. Had we remained a second longer, we would have fallen to the point of no return. But why the rush? What's the imagery? What's the message of B'chipazim? So on a Klal Yisrael level, the message is, look how quickly a person can change. Look how quickly we can go from being on the 49th level of Tumah to being free. Rav Shlomo Freifeld, in the biography of Rav Shlomo Freifeld, it says that Rav Freifeld once overheard a group of Jews poking fun at a handful of Israeli soldiers, saying, look how irreligious they are. Look how much less they are than we, the religious Jews. And Rav Freifeld stopped them dead in their tracks and said, hold on a second. How dare you speak about a fellow Jew that way? And remind yourself for a moment how quickly the Jewish people transformed themselves in the way out of Mitzrayim. This person might be irreligious right now, but he could become tzaddik overnight if he so desires. Transformation sometimes takes place very quickly. That's on a Klal Yisrael level. And what about on a Kadosh Baruch Hu level? And with this, I conclude, the Maharal writes in the Gvuras Hashem in Perek Nun Aleph. The message of B'chipazon is that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu decides it's time, it's time. it doesn't have to make sense. Like the Rav was describing a moment ago, the Seder to Nisim, to us it seems chaotic. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. As the Navi Malachi says in Parag Gimel, the Pesukim right before the Haftorah for Shabbos HaGadol, U'pis'om yavol el hechol, that immediately HaKadosh Baruch Hu can pave the Mashiach and come in an instant. Says the Maharal in the Gvuras Hashem, V'inyan hechipazon hu behiris, v'ein bo ikul v'hemshech zman. When Hashem wants to make it happen, when Hashem wants to bring the Yeshua, Hashem wants me to stop talking, Hashem can do it in a second. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could change things, could overturn everything in a second. We saw how quickly HaKadosh Baruch Hu overturned the world right before last Pesach. And halavai, halavai, we should continue to daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu pis'om yavo el hechal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should very quickly open up those gates to the Beis HaMikdash Shomala, to send it down into the Beis HaMikdash Shomata, to return us to Yerushalayim, which we zocha as a chabura, our beautiful kehila, eating carbon Pesach together this year, b'chipasa.
It doesn't feel real if Sam is not clipping a microphone on. I'm not sure for Yotze. You think often this time of the year about choosing a theme. About choosing a theme in our own preparation for our own starim. And thinking about an idea that could cut through various topics that we raised over the course of the Seder. Maybe for Pesach in general, and certainly for the special chinuch opportunity for our families that the Seder presents us to think every year, what's one theme that we could wrap things around, and one aspect of emuna, one aspect of hashkafa that we hope to focus on, hope to particularly transmit over the course of the Seder. Definitely a lot to think about this year. But one suggestion maybe is the theme of togetherness. Being apart and being alone has been in our minds plenty over the last year plus. It figured very prominently in the experience of last Pesach. And Baruch Hashem, the crisis has passed in part, but we definitely do not feel connected in the way that we normally do. And definitely even in terms of the Seder, for many of us, for most of us, it's going to be perhaps not as alone, hopefully, as it was last year, but not quite the same togetherness that we think about when we think about Pesach. Maybe thinking about togetherness and thinking of the looking for the theme of being a part of something larger and other ways in which we are a part of something larger. And I think that's something that recurs a number of times over the course of Magen. So let's take a look at several. So one of the first times it shows up is in a story that we tell. It's strange that we tell this story. We think every year about the fact that we spend a good part of Magid not actually doing Magid. We get started, and Magid is meant to be the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. That needs to happen before you eat the matzah, because the matzah needs to absorb the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim before we can eat it. It needs to be a bread of not just food, but a bread of words. Lechem sha'onu al dvarim harbe, so we're going to be mekayim the mitzvah v'gata levincha sipur tiyas mitzrayim before we sit down to eat matzah. Unlike the normal kiddush malakim suda, we're not going to go straight from kaddish to hamotzi. We need to talk first, okay? We tell him the story of sipur tiyas mitzrayim. But there's so much that we do, and we get started. We get some questions going, and we begin to draw some dramatic contrast. Avonim hayinu, v'yotzienu. We used to be slaves, and then we came free. But before we get to the second half of that coin, the other side of the contrast, the spiritual contrast, mitachila ovda vazari avaseinu, that we began disconnected from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through Pesach and Shavuos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us to know Him and to keep mitzvahs. In between, we take a long break. We start giving instructions. And we discuss who does Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and for how long you do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and to whom, and when, which night. It's interesting that we sort of have the instructions built in. But it's even more striking that there's one particular aspect of the instructions. We don't just give the instructions, we give a story. We don't just tell you, everyone has to participate in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, even if you think you know it already. I've been on this rodeo before. I know the story. I know Masechet Pesachim. Daf Yomi just finished. Arvei Pesachim, I got this down. Why do I need to spend so much time? No. The Tanoi, we say, Kolon Chum, Kolon Avonim, still got to be Masechet Pesachim. We don't just say that. And it's not just in a year that the Daf Yomi just finished Pesachim that we feel the need to reinforce that point. But every single year, we stop and tell a story. Of the five Zakenim who were sitting around in Bnei Brak and having a Seder, and number one highlights the fact that they were certainly Chacham, and they were certainly Avonim. They knew the Seder inside and out, and they spent time. Now they spend time, but Kalamabar is a Meshubach. They went for as long as they could. They maxed out. They kept going until Tamim said, Rebbe, it's not night anymore. The mitzvah's ended. Now it's time for the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. So it's striking that we build the instructions into the Seder, but it's particularly surprising that we feel the need to tell a story. So I was thinking that maybe a part of it is not just the instructions, but a part of it is to sort of put faces to this. It's not just Jews have been having a Seder. Here are people who we know. Rabbi Akiva had a Seder. Rabbi Yosef ben Azariah had a Seder. These are people that we know. And there's a sense of sitting down to the Seder and understanding that we're doing what Klal Yisrael has been doing for thousands of years. And the Rebbe, there's a very famous drasha Rav Salveitchik gave, I believe it was at Pinyan Ben. He described, or I knew he will correct me if I'm wrong, he described his sensation of giving shir. He says, he walks in, he gives shir, the Talmidim are there, the Rebbe walks in, you sit down at the desk, you open the Gemara, and begin to discuss. And you would think it's just the Rebbe and the Talmidim. He says, but he describes very dramatically. Suddenly the door opens, and an older man walks in, the door opens again, another one walks in, the Rama walks in, the Ravid walks in, Rabbi Akiva walks in, Ravina, Ravashi, Rashi, Tos, Rashi, Rabbi Tam, everyone's there, and he describes very dramatically. The Rambam starts talking to the Ravid, and a Talmud asks Sakasha ben Otam, and this one, and that one, and they're all engaged in conversation across the generations, because every time we open a Sefer, the Rav depicts, we're connected beyond, we're connecting to the past, we're connecting to the future, we're beyond where we are right now. Part of the magic of learning Torah Sheba'al Peh, it's even in the grammar that we use. We say the Rambam says, we say, Shmuel says, Shmuel lived almost 2,000 years ago. The Rambam lived almost 1,000 years ago. But Rabbi Yonatan says, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, and over the course of a minute, we're bouncing across the centuries, because when we learn Torah, there's a connection that transcends the here and now. We feel connected to generations before us through the magic of Limud Torah. And that's the idea of a tzibur. And that's perhaps part of the purpose of opening Magid with a picture of people whom we recognize from the Beis Medrash. Two nights ago, I was talking to Rabbi Akiva. 3 nights ago, I was talking to Lazar Ben Azariah. And it wasn't he says. So perhaps the Seder opens by that sense of connection. Things are different, and the Seder has been held in tens of languages across hundreds of countries over the course of thousands of years. And the Seder, even if it's different than we would have expected, but there's an incredible sense of connection to Tzibur, connection that transcends this moment in time, and connection that transcends these walls, this place. And you move on. Let's jump deep, and then we'll circle back to the center. The workhorse of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the core axis of telling the story of Magid, is the Holech V'Doresh, is at Seol Amad, is the Medrash, where you take the four psukim. Arami Ovid Avi, Vayareu Asano, so on and so forth. We take the four psukim from Parshas Ki Savo and we unpack them and we tell the story through the tools of Medrash, through intertwining and interweaving Tarsha B'Chsav and Tarsha B'Peh, and that's supposed to be the core telling of the story. Once we're done with that, we're ready to Ram Galil, we're ready to relate that story just told to the Mitzvah Halayla, and then we're prepared for Halam. A point that I think I've mentioned once in years past, I think it takes a new significance in a particular way. You know, when that's the main telling of the story. Sometimes we sort of run out of gas by the time you get to Arami Avad Avi, because everyone was saying Haaretz earlier, which is good, but you got to save the main energy for the actual telling of the story. And to keep our eyes open, every time we recite a pasuk and then we break it down. So this means Kemoshinema, and this means, but Yagar Shaman means Kaisal thought it was just temporary. It ended up being longer than anticipated. But he sham lagai, we explain. What does it mean that we became a nation? So we explain. What that means is that we were culturally distinct. Mitzianim sham. We had our own clothing. We had our own language. We had our own culture. So usually, it's clear what the interpretation added is. What's the value added? But every once in a while, it's hard to know what's being added by the interpretation of the Medrash. I'll give you an example that's close to my heart. I heard it from a shechter a number of times at the Seder. And I think it also, it's intriguing. And I think it also speaks to the idea of connection in a particular way. The second pasuk. The second pasuk focuses on the koshi yashivun. And we say that the mitzvah, they were bad to us, and they tortured us. So what's the difference? I don't know. They were bad. So you look at the Medrash, then the Medrash is going to explain it. The Medrash is, it's what the Medrash says about Vayarei was odd. We don't quote a pasuk that talks about ways in which the Egyptians tortured us. And we don't quote a pasuk that talks about something bad that the Egyptians did to us. Instead, we back up, Vayarei osanu kemosh ne'emar hava neschak malo. We go back to the beginning of Parshas Shmos, where Paro gathers his council and says, we've got a problem with the Jews, we've got to figure this out. We're watching Paro plan. We're not even seeing, as a matter of fact, we're not even seeing Paro put together a plan to attack the Jews. We're just hearing Paro lay out the problem. What is that? How does that explain Vayarei Lassana? Where's the bad that Paro is doing? This is a preliminary. This is a prelude. So Shefter often will point out that the Medrash actually is giving a very definite interpretation. It's explained by Vayarei Lassana doesn't mean that they were bad to us. That's why Ya'anunu. Vayarei Usanu, it means it's Lahariya. They said it's Hifil. They said that we were bad. Vayarei said they cast us as bad people. And that's exactly what the gist of the pasuk that the Medrash quotes. Havanas Chakmalo. Paro, before Paro can unfold his plan, he first has to scapegoat the Jews. He first has to lay this canard about the Jews that were disloyal. And if there was an attack on the country, we would go fifth column. And that's why it's laying the groundwork, which is exactly the opposite. There was no evidence to support it. There was plenty of evidence against it. Yosef, only a few decades earlier, had saved the entire country. Does not look like a picture of disloyalty. They said that we were wrong. And the truth is that it has a familiar sound to it because that's something that's recurred throughout Jewish history. Throughout Jewish history, that's a pattern in anti-Semitism, that there was often a Vayarei before a Vayanunu. And it's worth considering that that's something you're going to look for throughout the Seder, both in terms of Midah Ra and in terms of Midah Tova, both in terms of the Gullus and the Shibud, and in terms of the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Goel us. It's not only telling the story of what happened 3,500 years ago, but we should be looking as we prepare for the Seder and as we go through the Seder, what are the aspects of Gullus and aspects of Geula that are Bayam Mehem Bazman Hazeh, that happened then, but that the ways in which the story of the Gullus in Mitzrayim and the Geula from Mitzrayim, there were patterns that began there that would recur throughout the history of the Jewish people. Here's one example that stands out. But to look for those recurring patterns, to look for those elements in the Haggadah in which the But God is pointing out that there were aspects of galus, aspects of gula that recur. And what that does for us is not only it makes it a little more predictable, perhaps, and not only does it remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was with us, who imposed galus on us then, and who gave us geula then, is the one who is imposing galus now and will give us geula. But it also, I think, speaks to the sense of togetherness, speaks to the sense of being a part of something larger. That we're a part of the same Kalasa that went through Galus, we're a part of the same Kalasa that went through Geula. And then finally, let's circle back to the middle of Magen. Let's circle back to perhaps the part of Magen where we're most explicit about being connected to other Doros. Baruch Shem Avtachas Yisrael Baruch Hu. We say, we bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who keeps his promise to the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishev es haketz, discussed before. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calculates haketz. B'skrub has a lot to say about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu calculated it. The two different aspects. On the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed so much suffering that the 210 years were counted as though there were 400. And there's the other perspective as well, that to count the 400 beginning from the birth of Yitzhak. There are two different elements to what was being calculated. There was Ge'ir Zaracha Be'eretz Olahem and Va'avadu Ve'inu Osa. Two different aspects. On the one hand, we had to be foreigners, and we needed to suffer. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of each piece. We were foreigners in a foreign land from the birth of Yitzhak. Yitzhak didn't own Eretz Yisrael, and the Koshia Shibut was concentrated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to so much went into engineering this so that Klal Yisrael could leave early. And then we say, this is what kept us going throughout the generations. We say explicitly, this kept us going, not just in that dar, every single dar we've been in trouble, every single dar HaKadosh Baruch Hu has carried us. So let's close with one mysterious word. In the minutes that remain, the he sha'am del avosein of Olano. Who or what is it? The he sha'am del avosein of Olano. It or she kept us going. That's what was there for our avos, and that's what was there for us. Who is he? Not Roshlam. So the he sha'am del avosein of Olano. What's the reference? As Karav points out, Shechtas mentions the past. I was looking at the Haggadah they put out a number of years ago of Rav Goldwicht from Zatzal from Karen Biavna. He quotes from Biskarav, his Rebbe, very beautifully. That the Gemara says, Masach HaShabbos, that the Zchus Avos is no longer. We had, for many, many hundreds of years, Klal Yisrael was living. We were riding the coattails of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. We had the schus of the avos. The Gemara says, the Amor Shmuel says, schus avos tama. It's all been used up. We're working on it for a while. Eventually, it's all worn out. We've spent it all. But there's nothing left in the account. Tosa says, well, the schus avos is no longer. But bris avos remains. The schus of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov has been spent. Nothing left. But the bris of the avos has not. What does that mean? So zechus, Shechter often describes zechus avos as the way, if you do favors for your friend's son. I feel a soft spot in my heart. I knew your father. I knew your mother. So I'll take good care of him. That's zechus avos. But that, after a while, it could wear thin. You use it once too many times, the patience wears out. Rav Goldwicht describes it as more fundamentally as sort of the potential. If we're descended from Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, that bespeaks extraordinary spiritual potential that we have. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take into account not just what we've already done, but what we could do, our potential. But that too. If we're chotein, we're chotein, we're chotein, eventually that wears away. That zuchus of us wears away. But Tosa says, but bris avos is durable forever. Bris avos is permanent. The bris is a covenant. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a promise, and that promise lasts through thick through thick and thin. That v'hi sha'am d'alav ha'sein v'alam. Sometimes we have this chus, sometimes we don't have this chus. But the haftacha, Baruch Shem haftachas Yisrael, that he is the haftacha, it's probably a promise. Bris avos, that lasts forever. And we'll close with this. Rav Govich suggests that this speaks to a girsa issue in Birkas Kriyashma, in the Siddur. Machlokas Rishonim, and Machlokas Nuschos Arayom Hazeh. How does the first bracha of Shmon Esrei, the second bracha of the Birkas Kriyashma, does it start Avas Olam or Ahava Rab? So different approaches, this or that. Tosa suggests maybe you should say Ahava Rab at Shachris and Avas Olam and Mayer. What's it all about? So Govlich suggests that's this idea. Ahava Rab is overwhelming love. Zchus Avas is so powerful. Zchus Avas is deep. But it's not forever. Bris Avos is Avos Olam. I don't deserve. It's not as dramatic. It's not as rich. But it's always there. And the gift of Liman HaTorah, which is the focus of the second bracha of Kriyat Shema, the gift of Torah Mitzvos, which was the ultimate goal, the ultimate destination of the trail that began with Pesach and ended with Shavuos. So it's both. The two sides to that gift. HaKadosh Baruch gives us the potential for rich, rich, rich relationship. Powerful, intense. Ahava Rabba. We can activate Zuchus. We can even earn Zuchus. And at the same time, we know that sometimes it's not as dramatic, and sometimes we feel that we're not in as much as we ought to be. But there's still Ahavas Olam. There's Bris Avas. The relationship is there through thick and through thin, even if we're not as invested as we ought to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been with us since the days of Yetzias Yisrael before. It's this Tzibur Yetzias Yisrael that connects us as to the idea of Tzibur, the idea of Tzibur that transcends, that connects our generation to past generations, connects our generation to future generations. Ad bias gol tzedek. Achakasher samech.
Thank you so much. Just this one.